This is Dale. Welcome to The Brekkie Show. Monday to Friday between 7 and 10. First with the news, best with the music, plus all your local info. That's the Dale Winton Brekkie Show on Trent. A real waking up before you go-go. What do you say, Max?
Dale, I hope everybody's listening because it's a good idea, son.
I want to tell you a story now, Dale.
I mean, lots of people feel that Dale Winton is the sort of name that surely must have been conjured up out of a hat as a theatrical name.
Mm. A lot of people have said that, Malcolm. It's a funny thing because my very first job at United Biscuits Network, when Adrian Love was the programme controller, he gave me the job then. It was my very first job in radio. And he said, you know, we like your voice, we'll give you a job, but, you know, the name, it's too phony, you know, it sounds like a DJ's name. And I said, well, it's my real name, Adrian. So he said, really? I said, oh, yeah. So he said, well, and he renamed me Simon York for 6 months, but then when he left, I was doing the night show then, when he left, I moved to a different shift, you see, so I could go back to my real name. Funny thing, actually, because I come from a theatrical family, and my mother she wanted an unusual name, and it was Dale Jonathan, so it's DJ. Funnily enough, that's my real name, DJ Winton.
So that was actually specifically worked out at birth, virtually.
Yes, that's right, yes.
For a theatrical career.
No, well, actually, that's a funny thing. I wasn't intended to be in a theatrical profession. Went to school, and I was, one of these people, Malcolm, I'm not very good, I mean, I don't consider myself unintelligent, but I can't apply myself to exams and things. Oh, I'm one of these people, if it doesn't interest me, I don't want to know. I didn't want to know about school very much, so I didn't study too well. I got my O-levels, a few O-levels and things, but I think the family were quite hoping I would not be the one to go into the business, and I'd be the one who would actually become a doctor or a lawyer or something, you know, but I mean, it wasn't to be. No.
Of course, I mean, you lived at the same place where I spent about a year of my childhood down in Hatch End, didn't you?
Hatch End, Middlesex, that's right, yeah. We were there from 1968.
Mm, I went to a party in Cedar Drive.
That's just around the corner from me.
That's right.
That's right,
that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Well, was it there, in fact, that you first realised that something like this might be on the cards for you?
No, I left school at 16. I was always the one eager to get out and earn some money. And I didn't really get into pop music till quite late. I was about 14 before I really started to like records. So that was about 1968 when we moved to Hatch End. But I left school and I wanted to be in the music business. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I mean, if you'd said to me, what would you like to be at that age, I'd love to have been a pop singer.
Mm.
But, I mean, you know, that was never on the cards. So I joined EMI.
Why not?
Well, you know, I mean, I can't sing at all. So I went to work for EMI, and all I was doing was, I was working in the HMV shop in London, in Oxford Street, a huge shop, and they cling film every record, or polywrap, as they think call it. And I used to work the polywrap machine. One day, I mean, I loved it. I was in the music business. It was great. You know, I was lifting boxes of records, and, I mean, it wasn't the job with the prospects that I'd have hoped, but, I mean, I enjoyed it. I was quite happy to do it for the rest of my life, I think. And I went round the pub one day for a drink, and in those days, the mid-70s, was the pub boom of the discos and things, and they used to have go-go dances and things in the pubs, and there was this disc jockey playing records, and I thought, oh, I'd quite like to do that. And I asked the manager where he got his DJs from, and rang up the agency, and pestered the living daylights out of them for 3 months until they said, oh, go on, we'll give them a job.
But you'd never done anything like that before?
No, never in my life, and it was something... people say you can either be a natural or not. I think that... providing you can talk, you can do it. You do need a fairly good voice, I think. And they have a sense of humour, the fun approach. And I sort of developed from there. And I was just happy to do discos. I mean, radio wasn't something I even thought. I mean, I've never been a long-term person. I live for today, which is always a bad thing. I mean, my bank manager would shoot me for that. But, I mean, that's the thing. And I just sort of drifted on from there.
And you drifted, eventually, into the biscuit factory, because John Peters was telling some very interesting things. He loved his time in the biscuit factory.
Oh, he did.
What was it about that place that you enjoyed? And how did you manage to get there?
The smell. The smell, you couldn't walk anywhere. It was like walking through a vat of Cadbury's. It was incredible. It was... Funny thing was, I would say it was harder to get into UBN as a disc jockey than it is to get into any other radio station in the country. It was then, it's closed now. But it was one of those things where ILR was just about to open. I'm going back to now 1973, 74, and independent local radio was just about to blossom. And there was nowhere for a disc jockey to get experience apart from the clubs. And the word disco in radio is often sort of looked down upon. I mean, I think discos are marvellous, and I think that a lot of good talent is in the discos still today. But to get to the actual... the first step is always the most difficult one, and that was United Biscuits. It was like doing rep in the theatre, 24 hours a day, 4-hour shows, where you not only played music, you had to read traffic, not traffic, news, make promos, but instead of doing commercials and things, you had to do things like walk, don't run in the factory, and beware of forklift trucks, stuff like that, and you had to edit them, produce them, and you worked, my goodness, you worked there. But it was great experience, and that was the heart. I said, oh, did I send tapes in there? Endless tapes. And eventually, in 1974, I got the job there, and it was a great high for me. Because you felt, well, now I can... It's like passing an exam, getting in there. You think, if I make a go of it here, then I should be able to get a radio job eventually.
Mm, did it give you a lot of confidence then?
I've always had too much of that, Malcolm. I've always been... I was a revolting child, and and plenty of confidence.
How long did you stay there then?
3 years. Mm. 3 years. Mm. 74, 77, I came to Trent.
And the appeal of ILR, new station...
Yeah, I didn't think I'd get the job at Radio Trent. I really didn't, because it was advertised in the magazine, in one of the trade magazines, and at that time, Malcolm, there were a lot of people at UBN doing different shows, and as ILR was growing and new stations were opening, everybody was sort of like trying to get into real radio, and I was quite happy at UBN, and I thought, well, I'd like to stay in London. Then I saw this job advertised and met the then managing director, Dennis Maitland, in London, and he heard the tape, and he said, quite like that. We'll be in touch. So don't call us, we'll call you, but it won't be just yet. And I went away and I thought, well... And I was quite open about and forthright about my views on radio to him, and I thought, well, I've blown it. You know when you get that feeling, you think, I just said too much. And he said, don't call us, we'll call you. And 3 months later, they did, which amazed me. Mm. So then I came here.
What was it like coming out to the wild and woolly north from your background, really? I mean,
well, I hated it at first.
Did you?
I hated being away from London. You get used to things like, you know, being able to go out and buy a meal at 1 in the morning after discos. Bearing in mind, you see, I'd been at UBN, I was doing a morning show at UBN and discos at night time, so it was quite a hectic life. And Nottingham then was much slower. And I kept on thinking, oh, I'd like to go back to London. And maybe it took me 3 years to get used to it. I now love Nottingham, and I go back to London occasionally. Sometimes weekends I go back for friends, but London's changed. Perhaps not for the better, whereas Nottingham, I think, has. Mm. And it's the middle of the country. It's very accessible. You can go anywhere from here.
Well, you talked about doing discos and things like this, and it strikes me that the personal appearance side of the business that you're in now must be quite important to you, and the actual performance, rather yes. than sitting in front of the microphone in the studio, do you actually have the instant response? How do you feel about that?
I love doing gigs. So, I mean, if there are any people listening who would like to book me for summer balls, barbecues, bar mitzvahs, you know, call me, I'll be there. I'll don the glad rags. I love doing them. No, Malcolm, I love them.
Do you get any problems with people expecting you to look completely different to the way you sound on the radio?
That happens a lot, you know, and you learn at a very early stage. I'm sure it happens to you when you go out and someone says, oh, you're Dale Winton, are you? Oh, you don't look like what you sound. And the key thing is never to say, what were you expecting? Mm. Never. I always say, oh, I thought you'd be blonde, or I thought you'd be shorter, and we didn't think you'd be as tall as that. Things like that, you know, and you never know quite what people expect.
Well, that's certainly true. Blessed is he that expecteth nothing, for that's what he usually getteth. Though that doesn't, of course, apply in the case of Dale Winton, of whom you'll be hearing more next week.